Welcome back. So did you read the little instructions here? So, you know, there's different kind of inquiry. There's self-inquiry. We've been doing kind of teacher inquiry, which is like me asking you questions. And this is one where you ask each other these inquiries. So you take a turn being the asker, and then the looker, and the responder. Yeah? So, The sense is to get a feeling of the parts of this way of unhooking and looking and being, and then speaking from being. So the answer really isn't the point. Like what you say is the least important thing. It's that when you are asked the question, where is the hearer, that your awareness can kind of unhook and look through, and then feel what's aware when you don't have a little hearer or a little thinker or a little talker. Feel what that's like, and then speak from there. And you don't know what you're going to say. And we're going to go through it. So the idea is to with another person, so we're upping the ante, right? You got another person. You gotta unhook, look, find, and then speak. So this is the functional equivalent, and we're doing it three times through with each of you, 1 through 8, 1 through 8, 1 through 8, and then switch. So the first time through, you may be like totally in your mind, and then just relax. And the key is, this is not a test. You all get A's. So just let that part that has social anxiety about getting it right, it's not about the answer. It's about somebody being with you that's supporting you to learn how to unhook and look and then talk to somebody else, just say something. You could say blah, blah, blah if that's what it feels like. But you know what it feels like. It may be beyond words. What's here? Oh, yeah, there's nowhere. New mama. No, you're being a nowhere, nothing, or something. Whatever words come out from there, just as a way to begin to kind of complete the circle here of bringing it into functional related activity. Yeah? So, any questions about the method? So then, please introduce yourself to one of these nice participants. And you can spread out a little bit, turn your chairs. So coming back together here. Okay. Anybody having any fun yet? So in terms of the answer to number 2, where is the hearer? How many people had New Jersey? Okay, that's good, because that wasn't the answer. Was that? Okay, only if that's right. So, any response? Was it easier, more supportive, or more difficult with another person across from you? How many people kind of more supportive? Yeah. And how many people made it a little more challenging? Yeah. Okay. And how about both? So, yeah. Anything else from this that you want to share? Yeah. So, answers could be opposite. Yeah. Yeah. Back here. 2 people. Yeah.
So, first of all, it was great that you gave us all A's before we started.
Yeah, good.
So, appreciate that, because that made it possible. More readily available to be present.
Good. But
then, you know, we were joking about it being, you know, much easier to have a multiple choice. Mm. And some of the questions... felt like multiple choice. You know, okay. Where's the ear? Well, like we can choose A between the ears, B from the heart, C from around the room, and D from all the above. And so having had so much discussion before, kind of challenged finding what was true.
Okay. You mean because you would go to the...
Because there were some answers already ready to grasp onto.
Yeah, so that's the thing is that, you know, always to go to beginner's mind and to really let go of even the answers that you had even in the previous series of questions.
Right.
And then really look fresh. Not knowing, and then speaking. Yeah, thanks. There's two back there. Yeah.
When we were practicing earlier, I was able to, you know, have broad awareness as I do now because you're at a distance from me.
Yeah.
But when I was talking to my friend here and we were that focused on the conversation, I found that I could focus on him very deeply as I do in any conversation in a state of flow, but a hard time maintaining broader peripheral awareness. I almost found that gave me a headache trying to kind of do both at the same time.
Mm.
Is the goal to do that even when you're deeply engaged in something and have that broader peripheral awareness? Or do you sort of switch between that kind of deep focus on a conversation? Even though my mind is not all over the place, it's very much invested in this conversation, but it's not peripherally and more broader aware, if you will.
Yeah, so the two come together eventually. I mean, first you're going from one to the other, to one to the other, and then you open to the awareness that's aware of the energy that remains open while it focuses on something locally, so that you feel simultaneously open and connected. So that is the feeling of being aware from everywhere and here. And that will, if you try to keep going back and forth, it is a little, you know, it's kind of normal, you know, learning of the different initial stages, but ultimately you want to open to the integrated flow, which is really what a flow state, flow consciousness is about. It's very interconnected and able to focus very specifically at the same time.
But is the goal always to be in that state, even when you're deeply connected? Let's say you're talking to someone or playing a musical instrument or working or something, is it to continue to remain in that state?
Yeah, I mean, in a situation like if I'm talking to you, I'm open and totally connected and focused and broad and know everyone's here. Now, there is another type of flow state that's called an absorbed flow state, where you kind of enter your work, like with art or maybe at work, and you literally go in to the world, and then you're like in this world of minuteness, and then you look up and like 2 hours have gone by. Whereas when you're in this, what I call panoramic flow, it's like time slows down and you're in the now and everything going very slowly. So they're different, but the primary one is this panoramic flow, which you can effortlessly focus on a small task from while feeling embodied and aware of your environment. So that will come with time, yeah. Is there another one back here? Yeah.
I noticed that a lot of the confusion in answering the questions for me tended to point to the bigger picture of it.
Uh-huh.
So like the who is hearing, it's like, well, this, I'm hearing from this self and right in here.
Okay.
And that to me just helps it click because it's like, well, there's something that is aware that it's hearing from the self and the self.
Right, exactly.
Is that kind of that, like, step back?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, because you'll kind of go back and forth between these polarized parts, and then you'll all of a sudden get this, well, who's aware of those two parts? That seems to, and then it'll kind of relax. Yeah, beautiful. Great. Anybody else? Back?
So I'm curious, not that I've attain this space very often, but if I am in this space and I'm talking to someone who's never meditated or done anything like this, it almost could feel like I'm patronizing them when I'm like speaking to them. I'm curious like what your experience is just talking to someone with no experience whatsoever.
So yeah, as long as you're not proselytizing, you won't be patronizing. I mean, you're usually kind of match them. You're kind of speaking to their self, but you're also listening to their personality kind of jump around. And it feels like you're just more compassionate or kind and not, you know, coming from one up. So say what you mean by that. What does it feel like? I don't know if I quite feel like if you're talking...
it almost like it does sometimes, like I'll have an experience with someone and then they think that I'm not there. It almost feels like I'm somewhere else, but I'm actually very present. It almost like I know for myself when I'm with someone who is maybe in a space and I'm like in defensive or I'm in myself, I will feel defensive. And so maybe that's a better explanation. But.
Yeah, so you could either be in defensive or you could be a little too much in the kind of neutral, pure awareness. So if I kind of listen to you from here, I'm very interested in what you're saying. Then somebody would be like, hello, or come on back down here, because they're not feeling you, you know, you got no soul, you're not embodied in. So you need, when you're really embodied and open, and then you're just kind of soft and safe, you feel safe and you feel like you're not worried. You know, again, it's almost like your body's like a Tai Chi. You feel very kind of, you know, kind of almost ordinary. Like you're just like, hey, I'm here. And but you're like not here. You're not like worried about what you're about to say or what are they saying. And you're just kind of present. So it's really, you know, navigating this detachment that then becomes embodied. That allows you to be awake and human. Yeah. Great. Yeah.
All the different elements, like all the voices, the light, and then it sort of felt like I was everywhere at once, and there was almost nothing to say because there was too much going on.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It felt a bit like strong.
So like you were like micro aware of everything?
Yes.
Yeah. So
that was all kind of a liquid, everything sort of moving together. You know?
How many people were tripping like him? So there's a little bit like psychedelics that's going on, your serotonin system, but that's in the transition. That's not the goal, but it's in the movement from hypervigilantly keeping everything together to letting it loose. Then it's still trying to micromanage it. And it can't quite hold on until it lets go into pure awareness. And then it's like not trippy at all. Then it's so clean and you're like the day sky and everything's simple and equanimity is here. And then the embracing of the energy feels like more like juicy and loving and simple and clean. But it's almost in that transition from the complex of the small mind trying to hold on to everything to stepping out of it, that it can start to stretch a little bit, where you're trying to micro, you're aware of the space, but you're aware of the sound, and you're aware of the lights, and you're aware of the, and that's the mind trying to do awake awareness. So you got to step out of that into the pure awareness, and then let go into the awareness that's already aware. And that awareness is very safe and loving and simple and not trippy. It's just it's the love aspect of that. Everything is divine, or everything is God, or everything is free, or one, or whatever that part of the journey is about. Yeah.
Just to kind of build on, I think, what Mark was getting at, I was relating to your question. So when you have this experience of opening up and you realize that you're so much more than this sort of like solipsistic small self that you've been operating from, I've had a lot of challenge with people in my life who know me really well and like have known me before I like got into meditation or whatever, like my family is the ultimate example, but even friends where like I'll come back from a retreat and I've literally gotten the feedback that from my brother-in-law, he was like, you seem so peaceful, but it's like uncomfortable to be around you.
Right.
Because you're like not yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's been challenging for me. And it's oftentimes it feels easier to just slip back into the version of myself that I right. know that is going to make them comfortable.
Yep.
And I don't know if you just had any advice on that, I guess, or just...
Anybody feel that? That, knows that? That is the nature of conditioning, society, culture, cultural norms, and even what's called the, you know, the external family system. It's what the family system or the friend system or the culture system, normative system, just says, you know, if you change, you're messing up the whole group. So you know, we're going to do everything we can unconsciously and consciously to get you back to be one of us. And so we can be us in the way we know, even if we're miserable or mildly miserable, or because that's what we do. So that is literally a, you know, kind of a family systems norm, that's what happens. Anybody who changes is threatening the system, and they try to pull you back. So slowly but surely, you get, you know, find your own way through it. But at least, you know, you'll find a way to be yourself and grow into yourself in areas you can, and in areas that you can start to dialogue with your family and friends from, you know, just looking them in the eye and just saying, you know what, I'm really happy. I'm really happy.
It's a powerful, like, force. It's like you feel so amazing and expansive, but then it's like super strong, like
that's
this
super
conditioning
strong to get you
that
back.
Convinces you that that's like not the way that you should be.
That's right. Yeah. So this is something we're all dealing with, and maybe why a lot of us live in New York rather than small towns, right? Because it's a little more freedom here to kind of be yourself and find your subculture a little bit, you know, so you don't have to, you know, but in, you know, small town, small family, small, you know, culture will bring you right back. You're the outcast, you're the, you know, you're the rebel, you're the, you know, you get kind of brought back into the system. So just noticing that as part, and noticing the parts of you that, you know, want to conform and not want to conform, and just be with that and go with the process. And be yourself on the inside. I mean, sometimes I always think, well, you know, I'm a secret agent because I'm always awake, whether I'm not telling anyone, I'm not even showing anybody, really. I'm just, if you could get inside of here, you'd be pretty, feeling pretty good, but I'm not going to lord it over you or tell you that it's not that way, but I'm not changing this.
You're here.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Right before we started the questions, I triggered myself with something.
Okay.
And then the thoughts were really charged.
Yeah.
In that separate self place.
Yes.
And he asked me the questions, and I still did the exercise, the unhooking, but
okay.
Part of me was so not wanting to unhook.
Okay.
And I just, and I was able, and it's, I don't know, it's, I feel like there's a struggle in myself. Like I'm able to be in the big awareness, but part of me is still, you know, it's fighting.
Yeah.
When it's
lit, so the you know, the unity, and that's a lot of what we're talking about, is the fullness of this opening to the spaciousness. But then that's not the end. It's then realizing the spaciousness has energy and love, and then coming back to those parts that are triggered. So that's the real open-heartedness, and that's what we're doing. Is we're like, can you be both? Can you have this part that's really triggered, be spacious, but not just a witness from space, but really feel like, how do you feel toward this part from your open-hearted awareness? That's the question. How do you feel toward this part, just curiously, from open-hearted awareness? Well, I feel, you know, and another part will say, well, I feel upset that it's this way. But if you're, okay, well, that's a part. That's another part that feels that way. That makes sense. So now we got two parts. So how do you feel toward this part? Both these parts from open heart awareness. And if you then feel, you'll just feel this compassion click on, this big C compassion, and just like, oh, that poor part, it's really suffering. I feel really loving toward it. I feel like I just want to be with it. And that is like the click into who you truly are. And in some ways, the triggered parts, you know, can then help you, you know, you're helping the parts, but the parts are helping you find what is really compassionate, what is really your true self. Because you'll feel like the smart, compassionate self go like, how do you feel toward that part? Well, I feel like I understand the part and it makes sense to me. So I'll try to give it some space, you know, and it's like, no, that's not the self. That's so then, oh, when you feel that loving self, it's just like, it's like you're being embraced and you're embracing at the same time. It's like, oh my God. It's just like, oh. And then the part is what I call shake and bake. It kind of starts to just tremble or cry or unburden this kind of, oh. And then you're with it and just waiting it out and feeling this kind of energy, compassionate energy with it and letting it, you know, kind of self-liberate, they call it in Buddhism. Starts to self-liberate the early, sometimes pre-verbal stuff that you can't even be said. Just starts to offload, thaw out. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Okay, one more and then we'll do an exercise because we're getting near the end. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I have a question about like cultivating like deliberate compassion using effortless mindfulness. Okay. So I'm used to like metta meditation, which is more deliberate.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if there's any deliberate ways that you teach or is it more like a philosophical like type of embodiment of compassion?
No, it's so doing deliberate mindfulness, I want to make sure everyone understands that I'm like, if you like it and it works, keep doing it. It's good. It's helpful on so many levels. And then add this small glimpses many times during your day. So, but it also shows that one-pointed awareness represses one of your default modes. It doesn't, you can't function from there. Relative loving kindness can give you some positive feelings and stress release, but then when you discover ultimate loving kindness, it's like, oh my God, that's like not the same as that. So it's shifting into this awareness that's energized and grounded, finding that safety, well-being, love that then starts to arise as natural compassion. So you're almost, and as soon as you feel the loving, unconditional love or the natural compassion, joy, you start to just notice it or almost fan the flames a little bit of it. You just like let it enjoy itself in its love and its natural compassion, and it'll start to be seen. It's almost like, I see you, and then it'll start to go, oh yeah, this is good. Can I really do this? Can I be this? You know, and then the compassion will be kind of fed or nurtured once it starts to arise. And then you'll feel that it's there already, and it's a natural quality that arises, and it's so, it's like the fabric of the universe. It's like the fabric of who you are rather than an attitude that you're manufacturing. And that's the end goal. That's the open-hearted awareness. So that, you know, doesn't have to be here from the beginning. So thank you for the question, because it's good to know how to access that and realize that will come along as you keep going. Did you want to ask a question? Yeah.
I had a question about the mind-body connection between this practice and Tai Chi. You've mentioned several times and in the mime that you did this morning, it looked like Tai Chi movements, even though I don't do Tai Chi.
Yeah.
Do you feel that Tai Chi supports this practice as opposed to, for example, yoga, which many people use as a moving meditation?
Yeah, I mean, I think they both can be preliminary practices to go to, you know, loosen and strengthen and relax and calm your body, And then that when you get into this open-hearted awareness, this embodied, you almost start to move like you're doing Tai Chi. It almost is the natural flow, and you feel like when you walk, you kind of walk like a like you're in a Tai Chi or Qigong buoyancy. When I move the awareness, so there is Tai Chi where you bring the chi up and then gather the chi and then bring the chi down. But there's a term in Tai Chi called Wu Qi, and Wu Qi is, or Wu Ji, is the awareness prior to energy. So that awareness is actually what we're moving down. We're not moving the energy, we're dropping the Wu Qi, which is the awareness prior to energy, so it becomes centered or returns home to the field of eternal Wu Qi.